Hello, dreamers, and welcome back. Before we get started, I have a few notes about the show. This is an independent one-woman podcast, which means I depend on you, the listeners, to keep us moving forward. And there are a number of ways that you can help. You can leave a nice rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you listen to your shows on. It helps new listeners discover us and drives us up the charts. You can recommend California Dreaming and true crime discussion groups and forums. You can follow the show on social media, join the Facebook discussion group, like the Facebook page, follow me on X and Instagram. I also have Snapchat and TikTok if that's your thing. You can find me there too. I'm just not as good as being on there as I am on Facebook and Insta. And if you would like to go above and beyond in supporting this podcast, you can do so by subscribing to my premium content on Patreon. Starting at just $1 a month, you can gain access to dozens of bonus episodes that you won't hear anywhere else. For the month of March and expanding into April, we're going to discuss the murder of 15-year-old Seth Jackson out of Ocala, Florida, which happened back in 2011. So if you're interested in that case, then click on over to Patreon and sign up. And if a subscription is not your thing, but you would still like to contribute to the show, you can do so through PayPal using my email, californiapod@gmail.com. The links to everything that I just mentioned can be found in the show notes. That's all the business that I've got. Let's get to today's episode. In the last part, episode number 286, I played the hour and a half long interrogation and confrontation of Sherry Papini, which was recorded on August 13th, 2020. That would be just 3 days after they confronted James Reyes with the information that his DNA was identified on Sherry Papini's clothing. So this is approaching 4 years from the time that Sherry perpetrated one of the most highly publicized kidnapping hoaxes in recent memory. I took the time to look up some infamous kidnapping hoaxes in the past, and it does seem like a type of crime that fell off, sort of like an old-fashioned kind of a thing. Like, it's hard to get away with this anymore. It's something that people used to do in the past to get out of some kind of responsibility or to get away with a crime or to ditch an engagement or a wedding or to get away with someone to have an affair. It's obviously harder to do this type of stuff nowadays with all of the cameras and the technology and the digital footprints that get left behind. And I mean, the way that they solved this was genetic DNA. And it was pretty amazing how they found their way to James Reyes's doorsteps, you know? And as I looked, I found actually another more recent case out of the state of Alabama. It happened on July 13th, 2023 in the city or town of Hoover. A woman named Carlethia Nicole Russell, who was born in either 1997 or 1998, vanished for 49 hours. She falsely reported to police afterwards that she had been kidnapped. Her story went viral on a variety of social media platforms, and 11 days later, she admitted that she made up the whole story and was not actually kidnapped. Her original story was that she stopped on the side of Interstate 459, where she claimed to have seen an unattended child off the side of the highway. She said that after she called 911, she called a family member to tell them about the situation. But then her contact with that family member was suddenly cut off, but the line stayed open. When police arrived at the scene, they found her car abandoned at the location that she described that she was at. 49 hours after she was abducted, Carlethia showed up at her parents' house. That was on July 15th, 2023. From there, she was transported to the hospital where she was spoken to briefly by police. And during this initial interview, Carlethia said that she was abducted by a man and forced inside of a tractor trailer truck. She said that she had been able to escape, but he caught up with her and then put her inside a car. Carlethia then said her abductor blindfolded her, undressed her, and took pictures of her, but said that he stopped short of bounding her wrists in order to not leave any type of ligature marks on her skin. She said that she was able to escape a second time and made her way home. During the time she was missing, Crime Stoppers actually raised $63,000 in reward money in an effort to help find her. As authorities investigated, they began to report that they were having trouble verifying most of Carlethia's story, and that the more they looked, the more doubt was being cast on her statements about her abduction. They found in her Google history that she had searched for things like, do you have to pay for an Amber Alert? How to take money from a register without being caught? Birmingham bus station, one-way ticket from Birmingham to Nashville. And she looked up the movie Taken. The Hoover Police Department also released a statement that they did not find any information or evidence of a lost child on the side of the highway, nor did anyone else make any other emergency calls to report seeing a young toddler alone on that interstate. 11 days after she was abducted, Carlethia, through her attorney, admitted that she lied about being kidnapped. The statement read, "There was no kidnapping on Thursday, July 13, 2003. My client did not see a baby on the side of the road. My client did not leave the Hoover area when she was identified as a missing person. My client did not have any help in this incident. This was a single act done by herself. My client was not with anyone or at any hotel with anyone from the time she was missing. My client apologizes for her actions to the community, the volunteers who were searching for her, to the Hoover Police Department and other agencies, as well as to her family and friends." So Carlethia went on to be charged with 2 misdemeanors for the abduction hoax, making a false report to a law enforcement agency, and falsely reporting an incident. She pleaded not guilty, but was subsequently found guilty by a municipal court judge on October 11th, 2023. Apparently, there are no jury trials in municipal court, but according to the U.S. Constitution, anyone who is facing time in jail has the right to have a trial by jury, and Carlethia, through her attorneys, has indicated that she would be appealing. As far as I can tell, she has so far managed to avoid jail time. I don't think the case is completely over, especially if she is going to file an appeal. But if she gets no jail time and she appeals and she goes to trial, she runs the risk of having to serve time. But anyway, this stuff is still happening, these fake abductions. It's crazy. Police try to make a habit of checking and double checking and verifying everything. And it's getting easier and easier to disprove stories like this. All right, so let's talk about Sherry's third and final interview with these 2 investigators. So the 2 same investigators have both Sherry and Keith, and by same investigators, that means the ones that we've been hearing in all of these audio recordings, the ones when they talked to Sherry back in 2016 when she first came back, and then the same ones that went down to speak to James Reyes. So they have Sherry and Keith sitting across the desk from them inside an interview room. They start off by telling Sherry that some stuff has come up, that there's always been this DNA that's been floating around out there. But before they get to it, they want to thank Sherry and Keith for taking the time to come talk to them again. But this is also kind of a roundabout way of telling them that they are there voluntarily. And it's a thing that they definitely have to say when a person that they're talking to or interviewing is there to answer questions, but they're not necessarily in custody or under arrest. Whenever someone is told in a situation that they're free to leave, most people will say, don't sit there, don't answer questions. If they tell you you're free to go, it's probably best to go. They might just turn around and arrest you with the information and the evidence that they had at hand. But either way, whichever happens, the best course of action is to ask to speak to your attorney. Even if you feel like it makes you look guilty, in the long run, it's probably better to just keep your mouth shut, because all of these lies and untruths will come back to haunt you if you sit there and decide to try to talk your way out of trouble. However, most of the time, we find that people who find themselves in these situations are a lot like Sherry in that they think that they're able to outsmart law enforcement, or they think that because of who they are or what they have or what they look like gives them a certain kind of credibility and a level of believability purely based on superficial nonsense. For her entire life, Sherry Papini has been able to portray this image of herself as this meek, pretty, helpless, fragile damsel in distress that's been able to cast herself as a victim at every opportunity, most likely for attention or sympathy or something. Like, something had to be gained by Sherry out of all of this, and whatever it was that she got out of it. And because she did, on the surface, appear to be many of those things that I listed, the truth of the matter would turn out to be very different. In that sense, Sherry Papini kind of reminds me a little bit of like Jodi Arias. Real smart and sweet and pretty and soft-spoken on the outside, but completely evil on the inside. Of course, what Sherry did wasn't as horrific as what Jodi Arias did, but it feels like the motivation behind it all and their MOs are very similar. It comes from the same place, and it was all about attention from men for the both of them. The main difference is that Sherry Papini was a philandering trollop. One of the things about Jodi Arias, in my own amateur opinion, is that she was not a cheater, at least not at the point when she murdered Travis Alexander. She liked being in relationships. She did have several leading up to and including Travis, but I think she was searching for a husband. She liked being in long-term relationships, and I think that if later on Jodi would have gotten married, she probably would have eventually cheated. I think she would have grown bored and discontent, and she would have gone looking for attention again from men. But I feel like Jodi was also desperate and so obsessed with having a boyfriend that would marry her one day that she became so hyper-focused on Travis. And she was pretty. That might be debatable now. But she had no troubles attracting men. And Jodi Arias tended to get hung up on one man at a time, and she wanted to put all of her eggs into one basket. She even bought a house with one boyfriend. Travis did a lot of unacceptable shit to Jodi and treated her very badly, but it just so happened to have come to a point in Jodi's life where she just couldn't take it anymore. Not just from him, but from every boyfriend that she had, it seemed to lead to some kind of drama. And I'm not saying Travis deserved what happened to him. He just wasn't right. And if, for some reason, the two of them ended up getting married, you know his ass would have been cheating on her too, probably. All of that is to say is that people like Jodi Arias and Sherry Papini, they think that they can just flip their hair and bat their eyelashes and have this cutesy inflection in their voice, and law enforcement will just melt in their hands, right? And they'll believe everything that these women say. They are so used to being able to manipulate men that it doesn't even occur to them that they might just get caught lying. Sherry is going to spend the next hour and a half fake crying her way through this grilling, where she's being told that her liar, liar, pants on fire have been burning for 4 years now, and they know it. She's going to keep up the fakery because in her own stupid little mind, there's no way that she's not believable. She thinks that she can boo-hoo these hardened members of law enforcement into continuing to go along with her lies. I personally don't think that they ever believed her, but I don't think Sherry ever thought that they didn't believe her. I think she thought she was getting away with this the whole entire time. Unlike the Denise Huskins case, however, these investigators never went to the media and said that Sherry Papini made up the whole story. that was the big mistake that they made in that case with Huskins and her boyfriend. Remember that whole mess also happened in California? They went to the media and accused her of faking it, and it turned out that it was very real. If these investigators had their doubts about Sherry and her story, they kept quiet about it, and they let the investigation lead them to the correct answers. It left us kind of in limbo because we didn't know for a long time what had happened to Sherry. But now that it's all out there, whew, I wish I would have known this a lot sooner, but I'm glad it all came out, which is why I wanted to revisit this and play all of these audio interrogations and interviews that they did, because I found them to be totally fascinating. Okay, so like I said, the investigators tell Sherry and Keith that they appreciate them coming down because it is voluntary and she's free to go at any time. But right off the bat, they tell her that the only thing that they want from her are truthful statements, because it is a crime to lie to a federal agent. Keith was like, yeah, of course, understood. And Sherry, she just kind of sat there stoically. So the investigator reminded them that there's always been this DNA that's been out there, and they've been testing. And, you know, it was only a year and a half after Sherry's kidnapping hoax that one of the biggest cases in California was solved through genetic DNA testing. And that was the case of the Golden State Killer, or the original Night Stalker, also known as the East Area Rapist. Whatever you want to call him, his name was Joseph DeAngelo. His wasn't the first case solved through genetic DNA analysis, but it was definitely one of the most significant ones because of how prolific of a rapist and a killer he had been, and how the case had spanned so many decades and had been unsolved for so long. That is when searching genetic databases for family members of unknown DNA found at crime scenes really started to become a thing. That happened in the years following Sherry's kidnapping, and that's what they're about to do here. Break the news to Sherry that they never gave up trying to solve this puzzle that she brought before them. They told Keith and Sherry that they've done testing after testing after testing with this DNA. They brought up Parabon Nanolabs, which is one of the private companies that does genetic DNA analysis testing. They said that over the years, they've been running the DNA through test after test, and they kept running into wall after wall after wall. But recently, they ran a test through a familial DNA database, and they actually got a hit. And they explained to Keith and Sherry that the hit indicated that they found a relative of the person whose DNA they found on the clothing that Sherry was wearing when she returned after being missing for 22 days. I couldn't exactly recall off the top of my head if we knew back in the months and years following Sherry's kidnapping hoax, if we knew that there had been unknown male DNA found on her clothing. I think we knew something about some DNA. I'm just kind of drawing a blank at the moment in terms of the timeline. But yeah, so they're letting Sherry know that they finally identified the DNA by linking it through a match from a relative who had uploaded their DNA to a public database. So somewhere in this family tree, they discovered on the database, this DNA on Sherry came from someone in that family lineage. And that was the hit that really opened up the investigation into a whole new direction, because they actually had evidence pointing them to a suspect, or at the very least, the family of the suspect. The investigator said that once they figured out some of the relatives of the person who left the DNA behind on Sherry's clothing, they started looking at the online presence of those family members. They began to look at their Facebook pages, looking for names and relatives, and they started searching these people's criminal histories to see if there were any red flags that they needed to look further into. They were just doing their normal investigation, looking into things, and they find in this case, they started to find some very interesting things, they tell her. At that point, you could hear Keith say, okay, he is really super interested. Sherry's just kind of sitting there to Keith's left. She has her hands clasped in her lap, her legs crossed, and she's a little bit hunched over, again, kind of trying to dwarf herself. Then they say, once we started looking, we began finding some interesting things. And one of the investigators pulls up a printout of a picture and asks them to look at it and tell them if there's anything in the picture that looks of interest to them. Keith is being really extra and overly interested, but at the same time, I do think he's really excited to finally get some real answers. Who knows what Sherry's been telling him in the last 4 years since the kidnapping, but he is staring hard at this photo to a point where he actually stands up to stare down directly over the picture. It was so pronounced and distracting, Keith's behavior and his body language, and it was becoming problematic because the investigators really want is for Sherry to get focused on what they're discussing, and they probably want to gauge her reactions and her facial expressions and her body language. But Keith is basically standing at attention and Sherry is acting like slumpy and droopy and just sitting there doing nothing, like a dead fish. And for Sherry, her first reaction is to say, quote, "I mean, that's an awkward photo," unquote. And then she kind of mumbles, "No." And I think that's to answer their question as to whether or not they see anything interesting or notable in that photo. It's a picture that was taken inside James Reyes' house. I believe it was pulled from his social media. The picture shows a table and some wood paneling on the walls, two things that Sherry had described to a T 4 years earlier. Keith saw it right away, with the table and the paneling on the walls. If I remember correctly, after she came back from her vanishing act, Sherry and Keith Googled around at some dining table styles and designs, and she pointed out one that she said looked almost exactly like the one that she was held down on when she was branded on her shoulder blade. Turns out that the picture she chose as an example of what the table looked like was quite accurate. The table Sherry described was right there in James Reyes' Facebook history. Keith pointed that out right away, that table does look like something that she had described in the past, along with the wood paneling. The investigators then pulled out another picture and said that back in August of 2017, she showed them that picture. It was the sample photo of what looked similar to the table that she was describing. So they have there, side by side, in front of Keith and Sherry, a picture of the table that she showed them 3 years earlier, and a picture of an almost identical table that they pulled from James Reyes' social media. There was a point in the audio, as these pictures are being slid across the table, that Sherry makes a quiet, She's being awfully quiet, so I wonder what's going through her dumb little head in that moment, if she's realizing that the jig is up, or if she still thinks that she's got this. She's cute, little, dumb, perky-ass Sherry Papini, and she's a victim, and everybody has to believe her just because she says so. So they ask Sherry, "Do you remember showing us that picture?" She said, "Yes, I do." And the investigator said, "Well, we were trolling through the Facebook page, and Denise found it." And Denise is someone who had been on the case previously, but was no longer working on it. Here's where we get the hint which direction Sherry is going to go with this information that she's receiving from the investigators. When they said that Denise was the one who found this picture, Sherry balled up both of her fists, shook them in front of herself in excitement, and exclaimed, "I fucking love her," talking about Denise, the one who found the picture. So Sherry's sitting here pretending to be excited at the progress that the detectives have made, which you would really be feeling if you were the victim of a crime and the perpetrator or perpetrators were still at large. It's one thing to be the victim of a violent crime. It's quite another for your attacker to be unknown and completely anonymous. It's unnerving to think it could have been anybody, and they obviously know who their victim is and where to find them. So for the past 4 years, Sherry technically should have been living in terror. Whatever she's done to keep up this charade, it has apparently been working on Keith, but here in this video and audio, we're seeing and hearing Keith losing who he thought was his wife right before his eyes in real time, and it's pretty sad knowing what direction this is going. So this Denise person who searched James Reyes' social media for pictures taken inside of his home that could possibly be used to corroborate Sherry's tall tale saw the table and immediately contacted the investigators and told them this is the table. So they wanted to know where that photo was taken, and if they could figure that out, then they could figure out where Sherry was being kept all those days. They turned to Sherry and asked her, "This is the table, isn't it? This is the one that you were branded on." And Sherry replied by looping Keith into the answer and saying, "We've been talking a lot about this because so many memories are faded now." So here Sherry is trying to distance herself even further from this. That's going to be her automatic go-to response is, "I don't remember, I don't know." The investigator was like, "Yeah, it's been a long time." And Sherry agreed, "Yeah, a really long time." So details and things that we did the best we could to take notes on, all of that. But a lot of it's really hard to think about. And from there, the investigator said that they started looking at different people and social medias to see who might have been involved to try to figure everything out. And then they have more pictures to show Sherry. And they've actually put together what you might call a photo lineup or a six-pack of mugshot images of Hispanic women that they want her to look at and see if she can identify the women who she claimed abducted her. Now, you know and I know that this line of questioning and showing Sherry a photo lineup is all a setup. In fact, some of the pictures of the women in these six-packs are relatives of James's. So there are women who they know who they are, and they're testing to see if she'll actually identify somebody that she's familiar with that would actually be innocent, right? Because they know that there were no women involved. I think that they're doing this just to nail her to the wall with as many lies as they can possibly get from her. And also, I think that they want to see if given the chance to point the finger at somebody innocent, if Sherry would actually do that to save herself. So they show her the pictures and they ask her if she recognizes anyone. And they tell her that she doesn't have to come up with an answer, that there are no right or wrong answers. Don't force herself to pick someone. People can change their weight, they age, they can change their hairstyle or their hair color. So if you aren't sure, don't pick someone if you're not 100% sure. So they lay down a piece of paper with the six photos on it and they slide it over. It's kind of situated right in between Sherry and Keith, but Keith, he's super interested in these pictures, so much so that he stands up again and hovers over them. And Sherry and the investigator, he's hovering over everybody. And one of them finally has to tell Keith to chill out and to let Sherry take some time to think and to concentrate and to not distract her. So Keith sat down for maybe like 30 seconds, but he stood up again. And in the meantime, Sherry's acting like she's carefully examining the pictures to see if anything jumps off the page at her. And you can hear her say, "I don't think so," which on a basic level, I guess, is kind of a relief because, you know, this woman could have just picked one of those random pictures and said, "Yep, that's her." And that would blow her whole story out of the water because she claimed to have never even seen their faces. She came up with those composite sketches that had half of their faces covered with like a bandana. But here she is looking at six pictures of Hispanic women and being asked to identify her kidnappers. I think they had a total of like 18 pictures. So Sherry knows in her own mind that if she chooses one of the pictures, that she's going to be implicating an innocent person. And I think this is like a test to see if she would actually take this that far. So after Sherry is quiet for a minute, one of the investigators asked, "Does anybody jump out at you?" And Sherry said, "Well, this one a little bit, number three," but eventually Sherry just settled on there being nothing about any of those women that makes any of them stand out more than the others. Nothing about them is particularly distinct or familiar. So next, they're going to show Sherry another six-pack of pictures. And the first thing Sherry says sarcastically is, well, that's a pleasant group of people. Keith again stands up to hover over the room. It feels like he's still running on that tiny little bit of energy that he's got left, that's hanging on to the hopes that his wife hasn't completely lost her damn mind. But you know, the guy here is getting to potentially look at the women who he believes kidnapped and injured his wife. He's been waiting and hoping for this for almost 4 years for this moment. So I can understand his excitement and enthusiasm. And Sherry just feeds into it because everything she says about the case and the abduction, she says, we, like earlier, talking about memories and recollections. She said, we were just talking about how it's been so long and memories have faded. And she wants to spread the responsibility of this around, while it sounds like she wants Keith to continue to be her biggest supporter and to continue to stand by his woman. She's doing it in a very manipulative way. Anyway, Sherry then says that she is distracted by all the photos being together on one page like that. So she asked for a couple of pieces of paper so she could look at each of the photos individually without being distracted by the others. Which, looking back on it, is dumb because we know the whole thing is totally fake. Over the course of the next minute or so, Sherry has this dialogue with herself about some of the features in one of the pictures, but then she just keeps saying that she doesn't know, she's not sure, it's so hard, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, she came up with one feature on one of the photos that Sherry said was causing her to pause on that picture in the six-pack. Then she settled on picking two of the pictures that she thought maybe kind of similar, but she wasn't really committing to identifying either one of them. Sherry had always said one of the women was older and the other one was younger. And they asked to clarify one more time their roles in her kidnapping, and Sherry said that the younger one was the one that let her go, that she was the nicer of the two women. She said the older one was really abusive and mean, who did all the terrible things. And then Sherry gets really giggly again as they try to work through her memories of this event / non-event. They start showing Sherry another sheet of pictures, and again, Keith is being a little bit extra, hovering over everything. I mean, bless his heart, but life as he knows it is going to be over by the time this video is over. And he's trying his darndest to be the ever supportive, ever loving husband. And so in this third six-pack of pictures, Sherry said that nobody's really standing out to her. From there, they said they had a few more pictures to show involving the inside of the house. They've shown her the table picture with the wood paneling on the walls. And they tell her that these are the pictures that caused this whole thing to snowball as their investigation went along over the last couple of years, all of which led them to where they are today. Now, there is a moment that's so cringy where Sherry asked the investigators, were you able to find where the house is? And they said, yes. This should have freaked her out, but she has to keep up this charade. So all of a sudden, like, she starts flailing her arms around in the air over and over, laughing and giggling hysterically, saying, tell me more, as if she was truly excited that they were on the verge of solving this, that they actually found the house. She's acting like she's excited. She's pretending to be thrilled about them having found the house where she was kept. But I can't help but wonder what the actual hell is going on inside her head when they tell her that they found the house, what she's really thinking, because this should have marked the beginning of the end for Sherry Papini and her tall tales. But she's committed and she's not giving anything away and she is not giving anything up and she is not caving in. She's standing by her story through all of this. And knowing what we know, those two investigators already know the truth. And it just makes this moment just really cringy for Sherry, looking back on it. Tell me more, she exclaimed. Oh my God, I just about wanted to die of secondhand embarrassment. So anyway, When she asked them to tell her more, the investigator said, "We'll get to that." Keith was the one who asked how they got to the house. How did they end up tracking all of this down? And they told him familial DNA. They said that it all narrowed down to about 40 people, that they found the DNA in the database that came up as being related to the person whose DNA that they found on Sherry's clothing, and they narrowed it down from there. It was a lot easier once they had a family tree to look into. They looked into people's phones and social medias and family history and criminal background and DMV records and things like that. And once they found that picture on Facebook that showed the table that Sherry described and even pulled up a similar Google image of a similar table, that is when the investigators were able to cast a net around this family so they could try and figure out who it was and how all of this is related. So the next thing the investigators did is they slid across the table to Sherry a picture of the closet inside James's house. You'd think at this point that this woman would get up, shut up, and lawyer up, but she is not. She kind of just stares at the picture on the desk. And then she grabs the back of her neck with both of her hands, kind of stretching, sort of, probably doing some hard thinking. Sherry then picked up the picture and looked at it closely while the investigators tell her that there is stuff in the closet now. She replied, "I'm not looking at the stuff." And she kind of had a snarky attitude about it, like in her tone. It was very defensive. And she put the picture back down on the desk, at which point Keith stands up and leans over it to get up very close. It's a very bizarre interaction, the way Keith is being. But I think it's starting to dawn on him, too, that there's something fishy going on here. So they show Sherry several 8x10 photos that they have taken on the inside of James's house. And she's staring at it while Keith is trying to feel encouraged that they're getting close to figuring all of this out after almost 4 years. But Sherry's just acting really bizarre, and he can sense it. And Sherry, in this very high-pitchy voice, says, "It's a little bit different, but excuse my language, but it's pretty fucking similar." It was so weird. And then Keith kind of laughed like this is some kind of joke. It was very awkward. "If I was held in a closet for 22 days by chains and zip ties, I do not think my reaction to the picture would be to laugh at it." After Sherry said that that's pretty fucking similar, she follows that up with a "but, it's different." One of the investigators asked her what's different and what's the same, and Sherry replied, "There's just lots of shit in the photo." And they asked her again, "You said it looks similar. What's similar?" This is what she said back to them. Quote, "I mean, this is what I'm remembering, that feeling, you know, grabbing it and feeling that feeling. But this part is different." And she's pointing to something in the picture. And then she repeats, "That part's different." And they asked her if the metal part looks the same as she remembered it, but this piece right there. And she interrupted and said that this part doesn't look the same. And they asked her what the difference is. And she said that there was a lot more there. There was a lot more there. Yeah, a lot more. Yeah. And then Keith does point out that the pictures are blown up, so everything looks bigger than it actually is. And Sherry says, "Yeah, but it didn't look like that." And the investigator goes, "But similar, right?" In the video, when the investigator asked that, Sherry just shrugged her shoulders. And she didn't say it out loud, but it was more of like a "I don't fucking know" kind of a shrug. Like, why are you asking me these stupid questions? She doesn't want to provide answers. She said in the beginning, "It's pretty fucking similar." But then she said, "It's different." And then she says, "There's nothing similar about it." It's like she's contradicting herself in the same breath. They next ask Sherry if there's anything else in the pictures that looks similar. And she replies, "I mean, the metal part." And the investigator asked, "What about the one shelf versus two shelves?" And she said she thought that there were two shelves, but she's having trouble remembering. But she thinks that there was two. "I'm pretty sure that there was two. I think maybe there were two. I don't know. I'm focusing on this one right now. I'm sorry." So she seems to be trying to bob and weave through some of these very specific and pointed questions. And she's sitting there looking at pictures of James Reyes' house and still hoping that her story holds up. When she said, "I'm focusing on this part right now, I'm sorry," one of the investigators replied, "Sure." "I've never heard a member of law enforcement tell somebody so hard that they're a liar without saying they're a liar than in that one statement. That sure was everything about this case, all summed up in one word. You were kidnapped? Sure. You were held for 22 days? Sure. You were chained to a closet? Sure." It's probably one of my favorite moments of this whole entire video, of all the videos that we've listened to. Sure. So they showed Sherry another picture and told her to ignore the TV because he said, "I'm sure you didn't have a TV in there." And Sherry laughed out loud again and said, "Yeah, definitely not." They wanted her to look at the window. So she asked, "What am I looking for with the window? Do you want to know if it's the same height?" And the investigator said, "The type of window, the wall itself, anything you get from these photos that makes you believe that this is where you are being held." And she replied, "I feel like this wood paneling is too thick." Now she's being nitpicky because she's been caught and she's trying to point out reasons why she doesn't think this is the right place. But they know this is exactly the right place. "And what do you mean the wood paneling is too thick? You can't tell thickness of wood paneling in a picture." She's so full of shit. So anyway, she continued, "I mean, there was wood paneling, but I can't remember something like that being there." And she's pointing to something in the picture. "And I don't remember it going all the way up to the window is what I'm having trouble." And at this point in the video, Sherry is starting to hide her face in her hands again. You can see that the stress and the pressure is really starting to get to her because the shit just got real. The investigators then pointed out to Sherry that the window in the photo has holes along the edges. Sherry again starts holding her face. She's shaking her hands off. Her story is caving in on her. The investigators then say, "We don't mean to overwhelm you. We're just trying to draw your attention to different things that maybe we noted, and we wanted to know how that compares with what you remember." Sherry totally interrupted the investigator in the middle of a sentence, but I could hear what both of them said, even though they're talking over each other. She said over him, "I'm trying to think about the window compared to the wood paneling because getting just final, I don't mean that's probably important." I don't know what the hell Sherry is talking about here. She's actually starting to do what James Reyes was doing with the rambling. Perhaps she's starting to get nervous and is beginning to crack. Keith then interrupted too and said, "I don't know if I'm supposed to talk or not, but it's obvious that those are screw holes. Is that what you're getting at?" And he's referring to the holes in the wall that were around the window where James had boarded up the windows for Sherry. And the investigator said, "Holes, just holes, screw, nail, whatever." Sherry is still holding her face and says, "Oh shit," under her breath. "Oh shit is right, Sherry." The investigator then broke the awkward silence and said, "Is it fair to say this? The paneling, like the wood paneling below and the sheetrock above, is what you remember, but you can't recall the details about the ledge?" And she interrupted and said, "I can't remember if it actually went up to the window. That's exactly what I was drawn to, is that this is touching and how it meets the window. Something's going funky with that, like it seems." That's what she said. So they move on to discussing the bathroom, which is the other room in the house that Sherry provided some very specific details about. The investigator said, "One of the things that we always noted about the bathroom description was the weird layout. So do you remember the layout of the bathroom?" And Sherry said, "Yes." "Well, it was door, toilet, sink, tub. Is that what you mean?" And the investigator said, "When you walk in, first there's a toilet. Do you remember which side?" And Sherry started laughing, like hysterically at this point, and she puts her face into her hands again, and she claims to not remember. And here she's trying to crack some stupid jokes about the toilet, and she's the only one that's laughing and in this interview right now. And she said, as she's laughing, I want to say on the left, I'm sorry. And she's totally like full on like giggling. I want to say toilet on the left. And she just is literally laughing her ass off. And then she jokes again, toilet on the side. And for some reason, she just thinks this is so hilarious. And the investigators and Keith are just sitting there looking at Sherry as she's cackling like a mad woman. Toilet on the side, sink, tub. And that's what she said. They have a small discussion about how it's not easy to change the layout of a bathroom, insinuating that what they have pictures of is exactly the layout as it was when she was staying at that house 4 years earlier. They gave her another 8x10 picture, and as she looks at it, she turns to Keith and says, well, that's just pleasant, and she starts talking about a magazine that's in the photo. And the investigator was like, is that the first thing you notice is the magazine? And I don't know if it's maybe like some adult material that James Reyes had in his bathroom. Who knows? But maybe it's like a Maxim or something. This is the bathroom where Sherry claimed to have sustained some very serious injuries. And they remind her that they were just talking about the things in the layout of the bathroom, the order that things are laid out. And still kind of laughing, Sherry says, this doesn't look like the bathroom to me. But the order, yes, this is the type of order, but this is not what it looked like to me. And the investigator clarified, so the order is correct. You just don't recognize the bathroom as being what you recall. Do you remember that there was a detail about the shower that you provided previously, about the type of something on the tile or something like that? Do you remember? And Sherry said there was a crack. And the investigator asked, where was the crack? And Sherry again puts her hands up to her head and to her face like she's having trouble remembering. And so the investigator tells her, look, this isn't a memory test. If you don't remember, that's fine. But we remember that detail when we took some of these photos, and we just wanted to bump it up against what you might remember. Sherry puts her hands over her face again and repeatedly says, I don't know. I don't know. Now here, this woman. Okay, so the investigator started to ask a follow-up question. And he started to say, so in general, we are talking about at which time Sherry holds up her hands and tells the investigator to shush, shush. Like, seriously, the audacity to hush these guys, like, that was so arrogant. And I think Sherry is losing control of her narrative, and she's desperately trying to regain control. And he was like, okay, sorry. And Sherry had her head down in her hands. She looked like she's really starting to feel the pressure, but isn't quite ready to face the fact that her game is over. Well, she apologized for doing that. And the investigator was more nice about it and said, that's okay, take your time. Eventually, Sherry admitted that she remembered that there was a crack in one of the tiles. She gave up that detail 4 years earlier in the interviews after she was recovered. Now that they're confronting her with the exact crack that they discovered, the exact one that she described, but they're trying to get her to describe the crack again in the tile, does she remember if it was high or low? And Sherry put her palms up, and then she puts her hands up to her face, acting like she has no idea, that she can't remember. And they asked her, was it one tile, a bunch of tiles? And she's still not answering, just holding her face. Keith is getting fidgety, as I think it's really starting to dawn on him what he's got on his hands here. So Keith finally asked if he could talk, and the investigators told him, unless she tells you to shush. Sherry apologized again, but, you know, it's too late. She did that. She basically told the law enforcement people to shut up. She said, I'm trying to get myself there. And so Keith says, as a reminder, I do remember when you went to my grandma's house and you didn't like her tile because it reminded you of that. And he had even sent a picture of his grandma's tiles to the investigators, telling them that this is the type of tile that reminded Sherry of the tile in the bathroom of the house that she was held captive in. Eventually, Sherry said that she's so nervous to say something that's not going to be right, so she just can't remember. And they remind Sherry that all they want is the truth. So whatever is the best understanding or memory that she has, that's what they want. And they show Sherry a few more blown up pictures of some cracks in the tiles in the bathroom. And they tell her that those blown up pictures of the cracks are pictures of the same bathroom tiles that she was just looking at, just more zoomed in. Sherry takes a close look at them and says, "I don't know." The investigators tell Sherry, "Look, we're not trying to overwhelm you. It's been a long road, but here we are." Then one of them says to Sherry, "If we could go back to that closet really quick. I remember when you were talking about being chained in the closet and trying to figure out a way to get loose. You talked about working on a screw and what happened to that screw when you were done with it." And she said, "I dug a hole in the wall and poked it into the wall." So they showed Sherry another picture and they tell her, because this is an interesting photo as well, Sherry, acting surprised, asked, "Is this the closet? Is this in the closet?" And they're like, "Yeah, this is inside the closet." And Sherry said, "No, it was drywall with an electric plug." And they asked her, "So this is not the one?" And she said, "No." She's looking at a picture of James's closet and telling them yet again that it's not the same place when they know darned well that it is. Finally, one of the investigators says, "Look, we're showing you all of this because ultimately, this is the house that you were at." They told Sherry that they talked to the people who live there. "We found the house. We found who was involved. We talked to who was involved. We talked to family who knew you were there." Keith, at this point, you could see him taking a deep breath, and his whole posture and body language has shifted. Sherry is kind of sitting a little more still, less animated than Keith. And they said, "We did talk to the one guy who did see you during this event. Unfortunately, there's a lot of truth from a lot of the things that were said, and that we've always said there's a lot of truths, but also a lot of unknowns. Like a simple one is the description of the bathroom is just weird. Like that was an argument we had in all of our offices where we were just sitting there like this part's weird, but then we find a house with it. So once we start talking to the person who lives there, who had lived there, who still lives there, we started talking to his family and this whole investigation, peeling one thing back after another, doing the same thing we've been doing for the last 4 years. It led us to a specific person, but not a female. It led us to the car that picked you up, but not an SUV. So there's a lot of different aspects that are true and false. And we're to the point now that nobody would have ever imagined that this would have blown up the way that it did. I've been a cop for 15 years, and I've never seen a media scale that this garnered pretty quickly. He turned to the FBI agent and said, "How long have you been in law enforcement?" And he said, 12 years in the Bureau. So we've been around for much more than 20 plus years combined. Even people who have 30 years in law enforcement, the media attention that this case got was insane. So I think with that being said, some of the choices and decisions ultimately changed the original path of what happened. I don't think anybody would have wished the media frenzy that occurred for this event, no matter the situation, like if it was a kid, because the media skewed so many facts. It brought so many people in from the woodwork. That if we didn't have the woodwork, we wouldn't have the noise, and that brings a lot of pressure when you get that kind of scrutiny. So we'd like to talk to you a little more about those things, and we can do it here with Keith here, or we can ask Keith to leave. It's whatever you're comfortable with. We can break down some of the problems. If you want Keith here, all we want is the truth. All we want is to be able to tell the truth. That's all we ever wanted from day one. We have talked to you for hours. We've been there. We've done all these different things, waiting for something, waiting for it to break, waiting for us to get us to here, something to lead us to here. Because like I said, the DNA came back to a specific person, and that specific person told us very specific things. His family then told us very specific things. So if we can talk with Keith or without Keith here, what would you like? In the video, you can see Sherry staring at the investigators, and then she very, very slowly turns her head to her right to look at Keith. And Keith, he has stiffened up. He's leaning away from Sherry. You know and I know that he does not want to leave the room, and he is hoping that Sherry will have him stay. But you know, the first time I watched this, I was pretty sure she wouldn't have the nerve to ask him to leave, because that would have been a huge red flag that she's clearly up to something and is hiding stuff from Keith. And she cannot start acting like she's hiding anything from him because he's stood by her all this time. So the investigators tell Sherry that it's totally up to her as to whether or not she wants Keith in the room when they drop the big reveal. That they, from the beginning, wanted Sherry to have a voice, for her to make decisions, for her to be in control of certain aspects of the case. That they told her that from the very first interview that they would never bully her, but they want her to control the narrative. The investigators then said, Sherry, it's been a long road, but we just want to talk to you, and we can have Keith step out if that's going to make you more comfortable. And Sherry turned to Keith again and said, do you want to step out or do you want to stay? And Keith said, obviously, I want to stay. And one of the investigators suggested that maybe they could do a little of both. They could talk to Sherry alone first and then have Keith come back in. And Sherry keeps glancing at Keith. And I have this feeling that Sherry is shooting him some looks, trying to non-verbally tell him to voluntarily leave the room because she cannot be the one who asks him to leave. But Keith is not budging. He's been totally invested in this conversation. You can tell that he's anxious to know the information that the investigators have to share with them. And the reality is he's probably questioning whether or not he can trust his wife to tell him the truth and nothing but the truth from this point on. Keith probably wants to hear it directly from the investigators. He doesn't want to hear Sherry's filtered versions of her stories anymore. They just remind Sherry, whatever she decides to do, have Keith stay or have him go, the only thing they want is the truth so that they can get ahead of things, so that they can control things, and how things got crazy and out of control, all of the unknown stuff. You know, if they say certain things, what's Keith's reaction going to be? Because you don't know what they're going to say to her. And they have no idea what Keith's reaction is going to be either. And they want to give Sherry the opportunity to hear things and to judge for herself and to know the things that they're saying that are making her nervous and are making Keith nervous, and it's changing the value and the tone of the interview. They said, we can all feel it right now from the time you walked into the room to how you're feeling now. It's all changed. Sherry finally broke her silence and said, well, law enforcement has always been an issue, so she trailed off. I'm not exactly sure what she meant by that, but if I had to take a guess at it, I think Sherry is trying to plant seeds of doubt and mistrust in law enforcement, like she's trying to set them up to be the bad guys here, that they can't be trusted, so whatever it is they're about to reveal can't be trusted either. The investigator just ignored her statement and said, if you want Keith to leave, I will ask him nicely to leave. If you don't want Keith to leave, then he can sit here and press on with all of us. And we'll move on to the next stages of this. But they're giving her the opportunity to decide. Sherry went silent again and slowly turned her head towards Keith again. And they then tell Sherry, obviously, there's fear if you tell him to leave. And what they end up telling her is benign, meaning it's not that serious. Then we could pull him back into the room and just tell him what we talked about. So we know that there's that fear of him wigging out. Like, why are you asking him to leave the room? Are you trying to hide something from him? We're not trying to trick anyone here. We're just trying to make sure that Sherry has the opportunity to talk to the investigators truthfully. So yeah. They're thinking that she's going to keep on lying as long as Keith is right there. And the likelihood of them getting to the truth would be better for them if Keith wasn't in the room. But Sherry is such a prolific liar. I don't think she'd know the truth if it ran her over, to be honest. Sherry keeps staring at Keith, and Keith finally says to her, "Look, they're asking you. Obviously, they're not asking me. Clearly, I want to be here." The investigators remind Sherry that they are free to go. They don't have to talk. They can change their mind at any time. Maybe Sherry wants to chat with Keith privately for a minute. That's fine, too. It's totally up to her. They can leave the room for a couple minutes. They say that the next stage of things could be nothing to concern yourself over. It could be something that we forgot to tell you, or we could tell you all of these things are starting to make sense now. We might tell you that the puzzle we have that we made all come together, and I may tell you something that causes that puzzle to crash and fall apart. I don't know what all the missing pieces are, honestly, but they all have right now, all they have right now are the facts and the specific items that are either going to tear all of this down or it's going to build everything up. And the investigators don't want to tear everything down without giving Sherry the ability to try and fix things. Whether it's going to be a big deal or if it's going to be a small thing, he wants Sherry to be able to make that determination. So they offer again to step out of the room and let Sherry and Keith talk, because I don't know what information that they're going to have, if it's going to be life-changing news or if it's not going to be that big of a deal. The investigators then talk about how Keith has been invested in this case from the very beginning. He's the one that did a lot of the drawings and the sketches. He's the reason that they have a lot of the stuff that they do have. Because of all of the investigating and the research that Keith has done on his own, thinking that he was helping to solve this terrible crime that he thought had been happening to Sherry for the last 4 years. So they tell Sherry that Keith has always been a part of helping her to remember the small details, and that's why they have Keith in the room, why he's been in there the whole time. Sherry interrupted and said, "He makes me feel safe." And they're like, "Yeah, okay. If he makes you feel safe, why don't you guys talk?" So finally, the two investigators leave the room and they remind Sherry, "I don't know what all the pieces are," and they may not know everything because they have yet to get any truth from Sherry up to this point. But they tell her, "If I knew this was going to bring your whole world crashing down, I'd tell you." Now, that's kind of a lie, because he knows what they're about to reveal is literally going to destroy Keith and Sherry Papini for good. But the investigator does say to Sherry, "I would suggest to you, and I believe it would be best if we talked alone, but it is completely up to you." As soon as the detectives get up from their chairs, Sherry reaches over to grab a tissue, which means she's about to turn on the waterworks for Keith to try and continue her manipulation of him, I'm sure. I think as soon as the room is clear, Sherry tries to say something to Keith without it being captured on the audio recording, as she's hiding her face and she's using Keith's body to block herself from being in view of the camera. Keith and Sherry lean into each other, and after a moment of silence, Keith finally says, "You need to stop right now and tell me the truth." Sherry starts in with the fake, high-pitched pretend crying, so I can't really understand what all she's saying at this point. Finally, you could hear Sherry whispering to Keith that she doesn't want them to find these women. She doesn't want them to be prosecuted. She doesn't want them to go to jail. She wants nothing more to do with this case. So now, Sherry is trying to roll back on a 4-year-long investigation and just a little more than a half-hour conversation thus far. Since she's been shown the pictures, she knows. But the problem is that she still thinks that she can outsmart the investigators by trying to manipulate them too. Keith said something back to Sherry, and Sherry says to him, "I don't give a shit about that. I don't want them to find her. I don't want them to find her. I don't want her to be arrested. I don't want to press charges. I don't want to find her." Keith said, "Okay, explain to me then right now." Sherry said, "I don't know. I don't want them to find her. You're not listening to me." And Keith is totally confused and clearly, and he asks why. And Sherry says, "Because she saved my life." It becomes a little bit difficult to hear what Keith and Sherry are saying to each other, but it sounds like Keith thinks that there is obviously some earth-shattering news that the investigators are about to drop on them, and he wants to hear it from her first. Sherry is starting to get real mouthy with Keith. She says something that I had a hard time hearing, but it sounds like something along the lines of, look at how they're talking to you right now. They're fucking with you. I don't want them to find her. I don't want to press charges. I don't want to go down that road. Keith said something along the lines of, you don't want to tell her. You don't want them to tell her. And Sherry repeated, I don't want to go down that road. I don't want her arrested. And Keith said, tell me why. And Sherry said, because she saved my life. She's the reason why I get to hold my children every single day. Keith is saying something again that I can't really hear, but Sherry keeps repeating herself. I don't want them to find her. I don't want them to arrest her. And again, Keith doesn't understand and asks why. And Sherry is just repeating herself, because she saved my life. And Keith replied, okay, so you don't press charges, but they still need to find out who it is. But the thing is, it's not like that anymore. Charges will be pressed whether the victim wants to or not. Sherry is just sitting there staring Keith down like she's probably used to him backing down. But it seems like we're actually watching Keith grow a spine right before our eyes and stand up to his wife for a change. Keith is still being kind of calm and trying to be the voice of reason, but it is still hard to hear exactly everything that he is saying. But he says something like, no matter what happens, do you think that this just sits here? It's just coming out. They found the house. Whatever happened, it's over. It doesn't matter what you say. There's more whispering that's going on, and you can hear Keith say, if you don't want to press charges, it's up to you. Sherry whispered something like, I don't think I could do it. And then Keith replied, you're not making any sense, to a point where I'm getting scared now. I need you to tell me what's going on now, immediately. And it was at this point in the video that the investigators knocked on the door and re-entered the room. Keith turned to Sherry and said, do you want me here or not? And the investigator tells Sherry, everything that I'm going to tell you, I will eventually tell him if you want me to. So he's offering to break the news to Keith that his wife is a liar and will eventually be arrested and charged with a handful of felonies. But Sherry again stayed quiet. And at the 36 minute and 40 second mark in the video, Keith makes a very obvious scoot backwards in his chair away from his wife. It's subtle, but huge at the same time. When he did that, Sherry just answered, I don't know. I don't know. Keith says to Sherry, you're in the driver's seat. It's up to you. The investigator then says, you know, it gets easier to control things once you know what the information is. So he's very dialed in to Sherry's need to control this whole entire situation. And he's trying to make her feel as if she's still in control when we know that all of this is about to spiral out of control. So the investigators decided to just start moving towards the information that they want to share with Keith and Sherry. They say, so I can tell you what it is. And Keith again moves his chair further away from his future ex-wife. I can tell you right now, I can say it when Keith leaves, and you could say yes or no as to whether you want him here for the rest of it or not. And Keith said, for right now, am I in the room or am I out of the room? And in all this discussion that's been going on, Sherry has yet to give an answer to this question, whether or not she wants Keith in there. The investigators, or at least one of them, is getting kind of fed up with it and says, I'm to the point where if you want him here, I'm just going to go on with the conversation as long as Keith doesn't interrupt. Keith agrees to stay quiet and stay to the side. And he is leaning hard away from Sherry towards the door, which I would be too if I were him. I'd be dying of embarrassment right now. So next, the investigators tell Sherry, look, we have a name to tell you. If you want Keith to step out, I can say the name, and then you can choose whether or not you want him here for the rest of it or not. It's completely up to you. Or we can just continue on. I just want you to have control over certain aspects of things. We're not to a point where anybody's going to jail yet. We're not to a point of anything like that. We're still at the talking stages. Here, Sherry starts in with the fake crying again, but one of the investigators says to her, you seem scared. And she said, it is scary. And he asked, then what is it? But Sherry still had no answers. She's just sitting there with her face in her hands and a tissue up to her nose, but she continues to stay quiet. So they say to her, when you stay quiet, Sherry, it makes us concerned because we want to hear what your answers are, and I want to be able to understand. but Sherry still doesn't say anything. She grabs more tissue and continues to aggressively rub her nose, probably trying to make her face turn red. Finally, for the first time, Sherry says to them, "I don't want you to find her." And one of them replied, "We're not going to find her." Sherry then says, "She's the reason I get to see my children every day." And one of the investigators says, "I agree, but we're not going to find her." The other investigator says, "She's the reason? What do you mean by that?" And the other investigator answered, "She means that the younger one let her go, right? Is that what you're referring to?" "Yeah, we're not going to find her, so we can just skip all of this. Again, this is the last time. If you want to do this alone, or if you want to do this with Keith. Keith has been through this too on a different level, so we're ready to move on and throw the dart. I'm ready to cast the stone into the pond and see what happens to the water." And he says, "Sherry, look at me. What do you want?" And she says, "I don't want her to get in trouble." And he immediately replies, "She's not going to get in trouble." So the DNA came back to James Reyes. The DNA that was on you belongs to James Reyes. The picture with the table, that's James Reyes' little brother who died in recent years. We've talked to James. He's been on the polygraph. We've talked to everybody around him. We have the cell phone agreements. We have the car rental agreements. We have all the evidence to show that James is telling us the truth. The investigators showed Sherry the picture of James's brother again next to that table. And they say to her, "That's James's brother, deceased. His name is Nick. So everything that you've told us, so many truths in this situation. The reason why you can describe the room is because you stayed in the room in the dark for days on end. The reason why you lost so much weight is because you stopped eating. The reason why you got a rash on your arm is because you cleaned his house. The reason for the brand is because he went to the store and bought the branding tools and branded you. The reason why your nose was broke is because of a hockey stick. I know all of those things, and I know that there was no sex. I know all of that because he passed a polygraph test. That said, it's not an abduction. She asked me to come get her." Sherry immediately began crying out, "No, no, no." But the investigator continued on. He said that James said that he rented a car. He drove up. He picked her up. "He passed the polygraph, Sherry." She's sitting there with her face buried in her hands. And they said, "Sherry, if that's not what happened, then what did happen?" And she cries out, "I don't know. No, there's no way it's James. There's no way. There's no way." And they tell her, "The DNA doesn't lie. His DNA was on you." And Sherry cried out again, "There's no way." And they tell her, "Robert saw you in the house." Robert is James's cousin who lives on the same block, if you remember. "Robert saw you in the house while you were down there, while everything was spiraling out of control." And Sherry suddenly cries out, "Who's Robert?" And they tell her that it's James's cousin. While everything ran out of control, and Sherry interrupted again with her cries, "There's no way. It's 100% James's DNA," they tell her. "We've been collecting blonde hairs from the room," and Sherry cried out again, "There's no way it's James. There's no way." She's waving her hands around. She's hunched over. She's fake crying. And Keith is just sitting there with his arms crossed, staring at his wife. And the investigators were like, "We're sorry, but it is James. Why are you saying that it's not James? Why are you saying that it's not?" And Sherry replied, "It hurts me. We were friends. There's no way." They said, "He came and he got you because you asked him to." And Sherry said, "No." And they asked, "When was the last time you had contact with James?" And she replied, "When his brother died." And they said, "His brother died in 2017. And Sherry was still hiding her face with her head face down towards the ground. And they asked, "Did his brother die in 2017? And she said that she didn't remember. They asked if he died before the abduction, and she said before. Which matches up with James's story, because he said he hadn't heard a single word from Sherry since he dropped her back off after she spent all those days at his house. They never had contact since then. So Sherry's story is that the last time she had contact with James was prior to the fake abduction. that she was in touch with him when his brother passed away, but I'm not sure when he passed away. The investigator said something about him passing away in 2017, which would make that after the abduction, but James said that he never did see or hear or speak to Sherry after he dropped her back off in Reading in the early morning hours of Thanksgiving Day of 2016, and I tend to believe him. So they asked Sherry when the last time she saw James was, and she continued to fake sob into her hands. She said that she didn't know whenever it was she was living in Southern California. And they asked, so the last person-to-person contact that you had with James Reyes was in 2006 when you were living in Southern California? And Sherry replied, I don't know. And they asked if it was prior to her marriage to Keith, but she ignored the question and said, it's him. There's no way it's him. And the investigator said, the DNA that's on him, the DNA that tells us his DNA was on you, the DNA 100% says that it's him. And when we went to confront him with the DNA, he told us what happened. He told us 100% the truth. He gave us details that nobody else would know. We can call him and talk to him about it, but ultimately, we put him on a polygraph like we did Keith. Keith was inconclusive, to be honest with you, as to whether or not he was involved, but 100% James was telling the truth. The questions were, did Sherry ask you to come pick her up? And he answered yes, and that was the truth on the polygraph. He was asked if the two of you had sex during 2016. The answer was no, that was the truth. We asked him if you asked him to brand you on the back. The answer was yes, and that was the truth. He passed the polygraph on all those questions. He took us to the stores where he bought the chain. We talked to the friend who rented the car. The car that he rented drove over 900 miles in a day on the drop-off point. Sherry continued to sit there with her head down and her hands over her face. She's not sobbing as much anymore, but she's quietly listening as her story unravels. Keith, if he leaned away any harder from Sherry, he would fall out of his chair. The investigator then says, Sherry, I know it's a lot to take in, but it's not like we don't know the answers to these questions we've been asking you. The fear of Keith's reaction, obviously now he's in the room. The fear of the media. The fear of all the things that are coming forward. They're in front of you now. The only way to get a hold of it, the only way for everybody to come together and heal, the whole community has to heal, is for us to be able to say that when we presented all of the evidence, all of the stuff that came forward, that you told us the truth. You told us what happened. Because you did go into a dark room. That is true. You did lay in the back seat of a car. That is true. You did lose weight. You were branded. Your hair was cut. You have bruises all over. But how those bruises got there are because you did it, and James did some of it. The reason why your nose got broke is because you held the hockey stick up to your face and he forced it into your nose. The reason why the brand is in a straight line is because he did it. He described exactly where it was. He told us exactly how he did it, where he did it, and how he did it. Only you and I, and maybe five other people, know where that brand was. He told me immediately. Robert told friends and family that you were there. His mom knew that you were there because, of course, it went on the news, and everybody knew that you guys dated. Everyone knew that you guys had a relationship. So when it happened, of course, James's family reached out to him, and he told them, yeah, she was here. She's saying I hurt her, but I didn't hurt her. So they paused for a moment and then asked, what are you thinking, Sherry? Sherry's reply was, that doesn't make any sense. The investigators asked back, what doesn't make sense? What actions don't make sense? And she said, a lot of it doesn't make sense. One of the investigators took his stack of 8x10 photos, placed them face down on the table in front of Sherry, and said, do you want to talk about those? And Sherry replied, no. They said, James's DNA confirmed on your clothing. The two of you haven't seen each other in over a decade. If you told me you hadn't been in his room and you hadn't had contact with him in 10 years, however, you described his bedroom to a T, and the DNA on you was still a vibrant sample, 10-year-old DNA dies. I mean, Nowadays, they can still identify DNA. It can still be viable under the right conditions. We know this when police collected evidence from cases back in the 70s and 80s, probably even earlier. If it's stored properly, it can be identified many, many years later. But yeah, for James's DNA to be on Sherry under those circumstances, she had to have been in contact with him during the fake abduction. So they did tell her that the DNA was seminal fluid. I had forgotten if they had told her that detail or not, but they said she probably got it on her clothing from either laying on his bed or on his couch. They also told Sherry when someone would come around the property or knock on the door, you would contact James. James would contact Robert, who lived two doors down, and he would come run people off the property. Robert told me all of that. James told me everything. You're the only person who hasn't started telling us certain facts. There are certain facts that are true. When we were sitting there talking to James, there were so many truths that were a part of your story that it's sort of hard to decipher the lies until we put it all together. Like when we asked him, how did you pick her up? And he said, I opened the passenger side door. I opened up the door and she jumped in the back seat. We asked him why he did that. And he said that he didn't know. It was weird. And then they asked Sherry, are you calling James a liar? Are we not believing what James told us? And Sherry said no, kind of exasperated. The investigator was about to say something like, I know you're scared, but Sherry cut him off and she repeated herself, I cannot believe it's James. But the investigator hit back quickly and said, what you can't believe is that James told us the truth. That's what you can't believe. And Sherry turned and looked at Keith and just held her hands up in like a what the fuck kind of gesture. And she's sitting there, turning to Keith, acting like she's in complete disbelief, hoping that Keith is also in disbelief, but unfortunately for Sherry, Keith is seeing the light. The investigator said, look, he passed a polygraph. And they keep saying that over and over again about the polygraph, and I'm not one that puts a lot of stock into polygraph test results, but I have heard law enforcement say it's more of a tool that eliminates people rather than implicating people. Like, they can believe someone who passes a polygraph that is in a position to not really see themselves getting into legal trouble whether they pass or fail. James Reyes was never charged with any crime. He could have been, I'm pretty sure. But if he had already been assured that with his cooperation he wouldn't face any charges, he has all the reasons in the world to be honest. But even if James was asked why he agreed to help Sherry and he gave an answer that showed deception, I mean, it's not like it's really going to harm anyone or anything. So when they remind Sherry that James passed the polygraph, she got defensive and said, so did Keith. And the investigators shot back quickly again and said, no, he didn't. He was inconclusive. James was involved. Sherry said, so James is involved. So James is involved. And here Sherry is still hunched over, emotional, waving her hands around, acting like she's in utter disbelief. And they said, James picked you up. You called James to pick you up. Sherry is literally sitting there with her palms turned up and open, feigning all this shock, like she can't believe what she's hearing. The real truth that her lies have been exposed and she's been found out. And they continued, you called James to pick you up. You mailed him a letter with your address. And here Sherry drops an emphatic no and then tried to continue to deny what they're saying happened. And they said you used a burner phone to call another burner phone for James to come and get you. One of the investigators next asked, so you're saying that since you've been married, you haven't called James because earlier you said that you had contacted James. His phone records show that you did. Sherry keeps desperately looking at Keith, and Keith is just like, you're on your own, bitch. They tell her, the phone records don't lie. The DNA doesn't lie. Now there's a couple of different directions that we can go from here, they tell her. I already told you, lying to a federal agent is a crime. So you walk out this door after telling lies, you've committed a felony. Sherry turned to Keith and said, I think we need my lawyer. This isn't making any sense. Keith didn't say anything, but if I could read his mind, I bet anything that he's thinking, who is this we that you're talking about? We don't need a lawyer, honey bunny. You do. Then the investigator says, what's not making sense, Sherry? She raised her voice and said that it's James. They said, no. The parts that don't make sense is that you're accusing two females of abducting you when it was actually James. The part where you are branded, James did it. He told me that he did it. And Sherry said, no. And they said, who would sit there and say, I branded Sherry on her right shoulder blade? Who would say that? Who does that? He showed us how, and he showed us the letter that matched the brand. He took us to the store and pointed out the letters. Sherry said again under her breath, this doesn't make any sense. The investigators pressed forward, ignoring Sherry's denials and claims that none of this makes any sense. And they tell her this, the problem is that today the case is resolved. The only thing now is how do we prove that you're telling us the truth? How do we prove that the truth is two women took you, but I'm telling you it's a male? The fact that you are branded is true. The small fact is that you are willingly laying down and did it versus being tied to a table. So we can do the polygraph and we can try to sort through whatever parts you're confused about. At this point in the video, we're a little more than 50 minutes into this conversation, and Keith gestured to the FBI agent that he wanted to step outside to talk for a minute, which they go and do. The sheriff investigator stayed in the room with Sherry, and he kept going. He said, the fear of how out of control everything got, the fear of all the loose ends. And here in the video, Sherry did with her legs and knees that she did pretty much the entire 4 to 5 hour interview that they did with her 4 days after she got back. She pulled her knees up to her chest. It's like a body language thing. She's being kind of protective and closed off. She's hiding. It's also maybe her way of trying to fake trauma, like it's a self-soothing, self-comforting type of move as well. But anyway, the investigator went on, the only people who can slow this train down is you. You and I. You're the only one who put yourself through this. So when you came forward, you could tell certain stories. But you messed up, and you couldn't control the DNA that we found. You couldn't control when we talked to James and that he would tell us what happened. Your story was always hard for anybody to understand. The tragedy that the community went through, the events that unfolded, the fear of what it all means. But there is, without a doubt, DNA that belonged to James on you. Sherry interrupted and said, I can't, no. And the investigator continued, the likelihood of this being an ex-boyfriend is a problem because it's astronomical. And Sherry continued to say, no. Then when you add in, when we go and talk to people who have never heard of us, people who knew you were at the house, none of them ever came forward. And Sherry again mumbled, no. And the investigator was like, no what? Do you want to call James? And Sherry started crying again and says, no. And the investigator said, this was a long road. I had no idea where this was going to take me. But right now, continuing to say that you were taken by two women is a lie to Peter because we're able to prove it with evidence. We have the car rental agreements. Someone driving that rental car 1,000 miles in a day. The DNA on you and James passing a polygraph. The FBI agent then re-entered the room and let Sherry know that Keith was going to wait outside. They probably discussed it out into the hallway and decided that Sherry might open up a little bit more if he wasn't in the room. So he tells Sherry, now's your opportunity. Sherry starts in on the sobbing again, and they asked, based on your reaction here, are you saying you did not call James and ask him to come get you? Is that what you're saying? Because if that's what you're saying, I have to understand that. There are things that James says that we're able to corroborate, and whatever you say, we will try to corroborate that too. But right now, I don't know what you're saying. All you're saying is that you cannot believe it's him. And you're saying that you don't understand. But there are details that he provided that we know you were in his house. We collected hairs from that bedroom that's going to provide the DNA. We already have the hair that you left with your cell phone when you were picked up. And Sherry here says, You have my DNA, obviously. It's like, yeah, lady, that's besides the point. Your DNA is in places that it shouldn't be. And the investigators are just ignoring everything that Sherry keeps saying, and they just keep pressing forward. They put more pictures in front of her, and they tell her, these aren't going to lie either. The descriptions you provided are that room and that house to a T, except it's not a gravel driveway, and it's not elevated, and it's not two women who live there. So here Sherry says through her sobbing, so James lives there. Still playing dumb. Yes, lady, James lives there. You know James lives there, so you might as well get it out of your head that James is not involved, because he's clearly involved. James already told us that he's the one who did the branding. That's something that he admitted to, and it's a crime called mayhem. He admitted to this felony that could put him in prison for a long time. Who would do that? Why would he do that? It just doesn't jive. It's now your opportunity to say that there were issues between you and Keith. Is that why you needed to leave? We read your text messages. We're already aware of some of the issues, but enlighten us if that's the case. If there was a valid reason for you to leave, let me know what that was. James said that you had your jaw broken by Keith, and that's why he came and got you, because you were in an abusive relationship. And again, through her sobs, with her hands covering her crying, not crying face, Sherry says, but I love my husband. And the investigator asked, were you in an abusive relationship with him? Have you told other people in your life that Keith has abused you and it wasn't true? One of Sherry's acquaintances apparently was interviewed and told investigators that there was an incident at a house party where Sherry got hurt playing on the Wii. And she told other friends that weren't at the party that it was Keith who inflicted that injury on her. There were several witnesses who said that they knew that injury happened at the house party. But you went and told James that you were being hurt and abused by Keith, and that you couldn't come forward because Keith has friends in law enforcement. And so they asked her straight up, has Keith ever been abusive towards you? Sherry was pretty indignant when she said this answer. We are not talking about my husband. I love my husband. The investigator quickly asked, then so why leave? Is James lying to us? Sherry, she's just sobbing and sobbing, and said, I would never leave my children. I love my children. I want to be with my children. I would never leave my children. And the investigator said, you did leave them, but you came back to them ultimately. And Sherry blurted out another sobbing, no. And they kind of insulted her as a stay-at-home mom at the time of the abduction. And they told her, you did leave them at daycare every single day, so it's not like you don't ever leave them. And James talked about that decision to leave them at daycare the day of the abduction, the day that she was driving down, and how hard it was on her, that she left around 10 a.m. knowing that Keith was going to get home, knowing that you were going to leave the kids at daycare, and that tore you up on the drive down. James told us that. And Sherry was still just sitting in her chair, hunched over, hiding her stupid face. And they continued to press her, telling her, and then things got out of control. And when he's saying that, he's talking about the media frenzy that surrounded her case. So here we come upon the first time that Sherry is actually acknowledging having a conversation with James in advance of the abduction. When he brought up how she was upset about leaving her kids at the daycare, Sherry finally said, James and I did talk about that. We talked about it before. At this point, Sherry started bringing up how she had been talking to other guys at the time, and that James was a part of that, and they talked about her kids. They asked her, when did this turn from just talking and chatting with other guys into a plan to try and get away? Sherry started sobbing, saying no, 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 over and over again. And then she says, why did I do that? And the investigator asks, yeah, why did you do that? We're trying to understand why you did that too. We're trying to understand all of it. Because Sherry is sobbing so much, or pretending to sob, a lot of what she's saying is unintelligible. But you can hear her say something like, I don't know. Why? Because I was doing that, talking to other guys, that has got me here. And they ask, so like, what aspect are you saying? How has talking to other guys got you here? Sobbing, Sherry said, I love my husband. I love my children. I've made a mistake when I talk to other men when I shouldn't have. And I think that's what she says, basically. It's hard to understand her. And they say to her, but you took it a step further. This is a little different than just chatting with other men. I appreciate you talking and being forthright about the other guys that you were talking to, but when did this turn into something more? Obviously, you would have never imagined that CNN and 2020 and Good Morning America would care about you wanting to leave Keith or wanting to teach him a lesson or wanting to get him in line. Sherry started rambling through her sobs again, and I couldn't understand what she said until she said, I'm not wanting to leave my husband. And the investigators asked, how were you talking to James, on your cell phone or another cell phone? And Sherry said she had a cell phone that she had gotten from her job. So I guess at some point, Sherry worked part-time at AT&T. And they asked her, so you got this extra phone just to flirt? What was the work cell phone number? And Sherry said that she didn't remember. They asked how long she had been talking to other men. Sherry again said that she didn't remember. They asked, why would James rent a car and come get you? And she replied that she didn't know. They asked her, if you don't know, then why would you get into a car and go down to Costa Mesa? Sherry stayed quiet. And they said, those are things that we can verify. The rentals, the cars, the mileage, the fuel, the calls from you to him, the burner phones, all of that. And from there, Sherry says, I'm horrible. Well, truer words have not spewed from this woman's mouth yet at this point, seriously. So yeah, she's horrible. But then the investigator said, I don't think you're a horrible person, Sherry. I just think things went a little sideways on you. We started this conversation with you not knowing what this was going to turn into. I don't know that I would have people standing on boxes in front of my office, that Keith would be on 2020. Still sobbing and mostly unintelligible, I think Sherry begins repeating, I love my husband, I love my children, I'm talking to other guys. And they asked, why did James come and get you? I know you guys were talking. I know you've said in the past that Keith has hurt you to other friends. But why tell them those details if it's not true? It's one thing to talk. It's another thing to say abuse is occurring. Everybody that I talk to about James says he's the nicest person in the world. Yeah, he may be a hockey player, but he's the nicest person in the world. He's nice to a fault. They tell Sherry, look, we know lots of people, but we don't know anybody who would rent a car and drive 9 hours for us. James did that for you. He thought he was helping you. He never asked you why. He never questioned anything. He didn't ask for sexual relations. He didn't go after a relationship. He didn't ask for anything. He has never talked to you since, and yet he's been quiet until now. The only reason he talked is because we have his DNA. That's the only reason we got to his door. That's the only thing that led us to his closet. The only thing that led us to his bathroom. It's the only thing that got him to start talking to us. Once he showed us the bedroom, and we started pointing out the holes in the wall. We said to him, you used to have this boarded up, didn't you? And he said, yeah. Sherry asked me to put the boards up. The investigator then said this to Sherry. Nobody is ever going to be able to answer the questions as to why certain decisions were made. And Sherry's reply, she stated, quote, except for James. So here we get a clear indication that Sherry intended to place the responsibility for the kidnapping squarely on James. I just don't understand. They asked, what don't you understand? He took us to the Hobby Lobby. He showed us the exact letters and numbers that he used for the brand. I have pictures of them right here. What is it that you used? What does that Bible verse mean? How would you have known that? Why did you pick that Bible verse? Mind you, all this time, Sherry is hunched over and still hiding her face. They asked, did James pick the Bible verse? Sherry continued to stay silent. Then they say, we need to be able to control the outcome of what's going to happen next. The only thing we know is that what's going to happen for right now is what you can tell us and what you could shed light on. For other people to begin to try and understand, if it was a mistake, it was a mistake. But at this point, not telling us what happened, not telling us the truth is another mistake. It's a mistake on top of a mistake. Right now, we can start over. We can end this. We can leave without a dirty conscience about what's going to happen next. Deep down inside, Sherry, I know you know what's right and what you should do and that you should come clean. Why did you ask James to come and get you? You asked Donovan to come meet up with you the night before. It all happened at once. And Sherry replied, it was a stupid thing to do. And then they said the best thing about that is that we can prove that Donovan never came up here. But now we can prove that James did, and we have records to prove it. Sherry mumbled something about this being so stupid again. And they said, you might not think it's a good idea now that hindsight is 20/20. Why did you ask James to come and pick you up? And Sherry continued to stay quiet and continued to sniffle and cry quietly. But they kept up the pressure and they asked her again, why? And she said, I don't know. Sherry said, it can't. And the investigator asked again, what? What's that? And Sherry repeated the same thing. It can't be James. They said it is James. Sherry, the DNA doesn't lie. The DNA was on you. Your DNA is going to be in that room. It's a one in septillion number of zeros that it was James's DNA. But despite your description of how far you had gone in the car, we already went down there. We knocked on his door. We took those pictures. He understood that the DNA didn't lie and he had to come clean. Now it's your chance to do the same. And if you don't, you're going to be shaking your head later, saying I should have told him what happened. Then Sherry had the nerve to say to the investigators, don't talk to me like that. And one of them said, like what? Sherry again just stayed quiet. Next, the investigator said, there are so many fears right now that we can't even wrap our heads around it. There are too many unknowns that we can't control. We can't control what the media is going to do. We can't control what everybody is going to think. The only thing we can control right now is to control that James told us the truth, and that's a yes or a no. What did James lie about? What did James lie to us about? Sherry replied through sobs, I don't know, I just don't know. There's just no way that it could be James. I just don't know, I just don't know. And they replied, it is James, that's not even a question anymore. We know you were in that room, that's already been established. You're the one that described everything in there. So what you're saying is that it wasn't James that came and picked you up by the mailboxes. Is that what you're saying? That it was still two females. Is that what you're saying, Sherry? And she sobbed, I want to go home. They ignored her and said, at the end of everything, you had to have known that this was going to come out at some point. And Sherry sobbed, this is all my fault. This is all my fault. I was talking to too many guys. Okay, but then how did we get to Costa Mesa? There's a big jump and a leap from just talking to men to getting into a car with somebody, but also getting into a car with someone that you had a relationship with. He told us about the abortion. He told us about your guys' relationship. He told us about things that I don't know if you've ever told anybody about. He told us so many things, and he did it all for you. Nobody else. And he got nothing out of this. The investigators next said, look, you're welcome to go home, Sherry, but now is your opportunity to tell us the truth. She sobbed some more that it can't be. Then they asked, so what you're saying is it was two females that picked you up. Sherry continued to sob, so they called her out on it. Every time we ask you a question, it seems like you don't answer it. She cried, this can't be happening. We sat in a room with you while you drew out two people on a sketch, Sherry. Are those two people the ones who took you? Yes or no? Sherry sobbed, I don't know. They said, you were pretty clear when I asked you earlier, what did the younger one do? And you said the younger one pointed a gun at you. She wasn't there. She didn't. It was just James. We have the car rental records from November of 2016 for the vehicle that was used. Sherry sobbed, why? They said, because we went and looked for it. We can only control what we can control, and we are at the point where the two did that. the younger female that you've described? Is she the one to point a gun at you? Is that true or not? Sherry sobbed again that she didn't know. They said, you do know. You told us earlier. Earlier today, when we were talking, I asked you what the younger one did, and you told me that the younger one pointed a gun at you and let you go. That's what you said. Sherry sobbed, she let me go. They shot back right away. You let yourself go. You let yourself out of the back seat. You never even said bye to James. Never a thank you. Never a nothing. Just an out. Sherry sobbed, no. They said, yeah, that's what James told us. They continued to pepper Sherry with questions and confrontational statements. So until you can start telling me that James is a liar and start pointing things out, he passed a polygraph. Here, Sherry starts saying, this is all my fault. This is all my fault. This is all my fault that I was talking to other men. This is all my fault that I was flirting with other men. It was such a stupid thing to do. I love my husband. I love my children. They said to her, that's understandable, but here's the thing, Sherry. Flirting with other men, not a crime. Lying to me today, yes, a crime. Telling your story and what happened to you is not a crime. And I know you're scared about what Keith is going to say and do and what's going to happen to your family. Those are all real concerns. But we want to understand the truth, and you're in the best position to give us that. You keep saying that it can't be him. The DNA doesn't lie. It's him. And you were talking to him. Now's the opportunity for you to tell us. As Sherry was still sobbing, she provided a little bit more information when she said that she started talking to James when his brother died. They said, sure, that makes sense. The problem is the actions after the talking, after the flirting. There's a big difference between talking on the phone and getting into a car with somebody. So you're saying that James got two females to kidnap you? Is that what you're trying to say? Sherry sobbed, I don't know. They said, what do you mean you don't know? So if James's DNA is on you, either we are still saying the younger woman pointed a gun at you, or you're saying you don't know? You've already told me that today. The younger girl pointed a gun at you, and you said that you don't want her to get caught. So we're still talking about the female that let you go. And where we're at, and I don't know, doesn't add clarity on simple questions, Sherry. Sherry continues to very aggressively yank tissues out of the tissue box that's sitting on the interrogation room table. And I would bet anything that every single one of those crumpled up tissues is clean and dry. And even if she is able to squeeze out a few tears, it's because she's crying over the fact that she's caught and she's going to be sitting her ass in federal prison by the time all is said and done. The investigators pressed on. These are very easy questions. Did James pick you up? You told me earlier that a woman pointed a gun at you. What detail is true? Only one of those is true, Sherry. You've told the one story. I've told you the other. Which one is true? Does James need to go to jail for all the stuff that you asked him to do? Sherry was quiet for a few seconds before she said, again indignantly, I did not ask for this. The investigator replied, well, nobody asked for this, Sherry. I believe you. Nobody asks for this. Under her breath, you can hear Sherry say again, this is so stupid. And they said, nobody asked for ABC News to park in front of your driveway. There's no way that you could have predicted that this was going to blow up and be as big as it was. Sherry again said, this is so stupid. And ignoring her, they continued, we're beyond the small discretion. We've talked about that discretion. Sherry continued to mumble under her breath. We talked about Donovan, right? And Sherry said again, this is so stupid. We talked about Donovan. And she said again, so stupid. Who picked you up? Was it James? Or was it a female that pointed a gun at you? Can you please answer that? Sherry started shaking her head, no. And the detective said, you're shaking your head, no. She replied, I'm not talking to you about that. I'm not getting anybody in trouble. I told you before, I don't want anybody to get in trouble. And they replied, well, you're going to get yourself into trouble at this point. That's where we're at. Sherry started to raise her voice and said, I didn't do anything wrong. I know you didn't do anything wrong, they said back to her. But right now, you're not telling us the truth, which is doing something wrong. That's where we're at. James put himself on a polygraph. He talked to an FBI agent. He talked to us for 6 hours and told us everything, Sherry. You told us many truths because you put yourself through all this. She continued to sob some more about things not being true. And they said, some of the things you did say were true, but you don't want to talk about the women. Sherry raised her sobby voice again and said, but you're saying it's James. We're saying it's James's DNA that was on you. We know that you were in that room at his house. Sherry then asked, then it wasn't the woman? Well, they said, we're asking you. Was it a woman that pointed a gun at you and put you in the car? That's where we're at. And Sherry replied, I don't remember. You don't remember if it was a woman who pointed a gun at you and put you in the car? Is that what you're saying? And she said, I don't remember getting in the car. I've always told you that I don't remember getting in the car. And they asked again, but did a female point a gun at you, yes or no? And she said, I don't remember. And they said, yes or no. You already told us today the answer. Sherry raised her voice again and said, you know who she is. I know you do. You know who she is. The lady that we showed you was another member of the Reyes family, is what they told her. We know that James opened the car door for you. Whether you want to forget how you got into the car, I'm okay with that. But you've already established today. I asked you today, what did the younger woman do? And you said she let me go, and she pointed a gun at me. We didn't talk about how you got into the car. Right now, I'm asking, did the younger female point a gun at you, yes or no? And Sherry replied, I know you know who she is. I don't want to get her in trouble. And they reminded her, she's not going to get in trouble. You're getting in trouble. And Sherry started yelling, I am not. I didn't do anything. Right now, answer this one question, they said. Did a female point a gun at you, yes or no? And Sherry, with a big attitude, said, I am done speaking to you until I talk to a lawyer. I will not arrest her. I am with my children because of her. One of the investigators said, I'm disappointed in you, Sherry. And she sobbed, I don't understand. There's no way it was James. He loved me. So they both started to get up as one of them said, yeah, he did love you. I agree. Sherry, if you want to talk to your attorney, that's fine. We can wrap this up. But if you want to keep talking to us, that's another story. But you said you wanted to talk to your attorney. So like I said from the beginning, you're free to go. You can go. I would like to ask you one more question for your own welfare. Do you feel like harming yourself? And she said, no, I just want to go home to my children. They said, you're free to go and do that. If you change your mind and want to come forward to talk to us. And Sherry interrupted and said, this is all my fault because I talked to other men. At this point in the interrogation video, the sheriff's investigator and the FBI agent walk out of the room. Sherry finally took her hands away from her face, grabbed her handbag, and walked out of the room. And in doing so, she demanded to know where her husband was. All of a sudden, the agents are out of the room, and Sherry just snaps back to her normal demeanor. They told her they didn't know where her husband was and that they would go and find out. Less than a minute later, they all come back into the room with Keith without Sherry. I actually don't know where she is from this point, maybe outside in the parking lot waiting for a ride or waiting for Keith. I don't know. But they're just going to talk to Keith for a few more minutes. He broke the awkward silence and said, all right, I'm the idiot husband that stayed around the whole time. And they told Keith, look, we can't tell you a lot, honestly. We'll be able to let you know some of the details. And Keith said, I mean, from my side, my whole world has been flipped upside down again. Why am I always getting held out of this? Why can't you just hit me with it? And they told him because all of this just happened 3 days earlier on Monday. Keith said, I know you're saying you can't tell me all this stuff. And they said, it's still an ongoing investigation, so you're not going to find any answers from us right now. That's the way it is. And Keith said, I mean, can you help me? Can you throw me a bone? I mean, she made it up. Is that where we're going? Or is she trying to come up with a whole other mess? And they again said that they can't give him any answers or details. He heard the questions that he can read into what he's heard. He's seen some of the photos, so he knows some of the investigation. And Keith said, yeah, obviously you saw me, like, yay, you found him. They said, yeah, we did. but you can also notice your reaction compared to her reaction. And Key said, yeah, no, 100%. That's why from my side, but now you're telling me, okay, you guys can go home now. Do you think I want her anywhere around me or my kids at this point? And they told him they don't know what the next stages are going to be just yet. And Keith said, well, it's not us together, I'll tell you that much. And I mean, we can all agree that she's not all there. If someone could do something like that to their body to try and trick everybody. And they said that they just can't say anything about that. They are worried about any sort of domestic dispute between him and Sherry. Keith asked about not having her in the house after that day, and they suggested to him that he might have to go and file a restraining order, which I don't think he did. I looked it up, but I didn't find any type of filing like that on Keith's behalf. Keith said, well, I'm going to have to tell her she's going to have to stay at her sister's or something because she's not coming to my house tonight. Then Keith asked for the courtesy of when they're going to announce everything to the world so he can try to not be at home. And they said that the news would be breaking later on that same evening. So this interview, it took place around 4 p.m. in the afternoon. So yeah, it's about to hit the media that evening. Keith then told the investigators that they were going to be the ones to have to give Sherry a ride to wherever she was going to go because she's not welcome in his car either. And from there, they were pretty much done talking. And they exited the room. Up to this point, this interview that took place in August of 2020, Sherry was still sticking to her story. Once she was told that they identified James, she stopped providing any answers to questions because they told her it was a felony to lie to a federal agent. Sherry would eventually go on to be charged with mail fraud for receiving more than $30,000 from the California Victims Compensation Fund between 2017 and 2021. Much of it she used to pay bills and to see a therapist. On March 3rd, 2022, Sherry was taken into custody and charged with making false statements to a federal agent, and she was also charged with the mail fraud. 6 days later, Sherry was released on $120,000 bail, and neither she nor her attorney made any statements to the media. Sherry was looking at as many as 25 years in prison if convicted on all charges. A month and a half later, in May of 2022, Sherry accepted a plea agreement where she would admit that she made up the entire abduction hoax. And in September of 2022, she was officially convicted and sentenced to 18 months in federal prison in order to pay $300,000 in fines. Sherry served her time at the Federal Correctional Institution in Victorville, California. She ended up being released from prison in August of 2023 and sent to live in a halfway house. And from there, she was to be on 36 months of supervised release. On March 24th, 2024, so just a couple of weeks ago, the feds were back in court filing a new motion against Sherry because they have yet to see a dime of the $300,000 fine that she was hit with back when she was convicted in 2022. According to the court filing, the total Sherry owes now is $340,221.23, which includes a 10% litigation charge. Nobody is really sure if Sherry is working or not, but her daughter apparently stated during a supervised visit that her mother was working on being a writer and that she was currently writing 2 books. As for Keith, he filed for divorce from Sherry in April of 2022, about a month after she was arrested, and that sparked a years-long custody battle over the kids. In his divorce filing, Keith cited the negative impact of their mother's notoriety as a part of the dispute over the custody. Anyway, Sherry had 20 days from the filing from March 24th of this year to respond to the motion and to notify the court if she wanted a hearing. So she has until around April 13th, which is coming up in just about a week or so. I don't know what will happen. I doubt Sherry has $340,000 laying around. I don't know if she could file for bankruptcy. I just don't know what the steps are in trying to collect that amount of money. And that, my friends, is the end of the tale of Sherry Papini, finally. I hope you enjoyed the series. I know she's annoying to listen to, but I really liked seeing this whole story play out to the end. I really enjoyed hearing her and seeing her get confronted by these investigators who had worked such a long time on this case that was so confusing and weird. All right. I do have a case that I want to talk about next. It happened a couple years ago. It's in another state outside of California, so we'll be traveling again. But I am excited about this story too. And that is all I've got for now. Thank you all so much for listening. And as always, until next time, sweet dreams.